KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. It's now time for Kauai Soapbox with Jonathan today. I'd like to tell you that this KKCR program has been possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Canvas, El Pastor Tacos, George's Food Truck, and the Kilauea Paint and Feed.
Kauai Canvas, professional gallery quality giclée canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971 or online at kauaicanvas.com. Kauai Canvas, stretch your imagination.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Open every day from 11 to 4, Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef George of the Jungle supports KKCR.
Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, specializing in professional-grade Pittsburgh paints and premium pet food and organic livestock feed. Propane exchange and propane filling, too. Located just past the Shell station on Kolo Road in Kilauea. Open Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30 and Saturday from 8 to 1. Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, 828-6655.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Soapbox coming up here in one sec with Jonathan.
And opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Is this awesome or what? Welcome to Soapbox, Kauai Soapbox. This is Jonathan Jay. I'm filling in today with a team. We've got Dove, we've got Marshall, we've got guests in the studio. I want to thank so much the underwriters, Kauai Canvas, Al Pastor, George with his food truck, Kilauea Paint, everybody. With people just like you is what makes Kauai Community Radio possible. So mahalo nui loa to you. And if you haven't donated to the station today, you can go to kkcr.org and click on the donate button. It will help us not only survive, but thrive, which I know is what you want. So we've got a great show today. We've got a guest, several guests in the studio. One of the first people we're going to be speaking to in about 15 minutes is one of the candidates for KIUC. And then later in the show, at the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking with, please say your name.
Jacob Devaney.
Try again one more time.
Jacob Devaney.
Awesome. And you are with
I am with unify.org. I write for Huffington Post, and my blog is culturecollective.org.
So you've had a diverse media background, and I'm very excited to get into some of the topics that you've done a lot of research on and are happy to come here and share with our listeners. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We're going to be talking about some other topics, but I think it's great that you're here. It's always nice to have some ears from the outside world. And please do feel free to chime in when you hear things that are happening in our little teacup that relate to the bigger world that we're also all citizens of. So thank you for being with us today. I just wanted to take the beginning of the show and invite people to call in with any announcements for community events that you may be aware of that you want to help promote. And then also go over some recent events in the news on the island and in around the world, because there's a lot going on, a lot to catch up with. And a couple of things that caught my eye in the Garden Island this last week was Syngenta announcing that they were going to be terminating the employment of, I believe, 23 different workers out there in the field. And I thought that was really terrible news because, you know, having a job that pays a decent amount of money and helps you make your payments on your house and car and keep food on your family, that's really critical. I don't know that all of those jobs are as safe as they could be, but hey, you know what? When it's the only job you've got, it means a lot. So my compassion and concern go out to the folks who are losing their job at Syngenta, and I want to really invite everybody on the island, if you have a small business of your own and you're looking for a little bit of help, I know there's some really good people who are now need jobs. So together as an island community, we can all help each other and take care of our own community members. And you know what? Yeah. Trans global corporations, Swiss mega conglomerates, what do they have, like $20 billion of assets, and they can't afford to keep a couple people high out here? Not so great. And in other news with Syngenta, they recently have hired Beth Tokioka. She was the former communications director with our mayor, Bernard Carvalho Jr., here on the island of Kauai, and now she is moving into a new community relations position with Syngenta. So she'll be taking her excellent skills in communication and no longer serving the people of Kauai, but instead a transnational corporation who makes profits from extracting value from their test sites all over the world. So that's a couple pieces of interesting recent news. If you have news that you want to share with the rest of the listeners, please do call in at 826-7771. We're going to try and do as many calls as possible at 826-7771 in the next 10 minutes or so. And then we'll be taking a break and coming back with our guest from KIUC. There's an election happening with KIUC, the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. And that is the utility company that we're all co-op members of that produces most of the electricity on the island here that we use at the station to keep our transmitters and all our equipment on, and you probably use a lot of too. So KIUC plays a critical role in our community, and because it's a cooperative and not a for-profit company, we get to elect the directors of the company. And we'll be speaking with one of the candidates for that in a little while, but please do call in. The phone lines are open, 826-7771. Phone line's still open. And they're still open. We got Bill coming in. Aloha, Bill.
Hi, Jake.
Aloha, aloha.
And then your levels are here.
And while he's getting his microphone and earphones all adjusted. Two, one, one. Okay. There we go. Ah, okay. I'm getting Dean, the general manager, is giving me a little quick explanation of which microphone is which on the board, which if you've never done this before, it's really helpful to get assistance. Hey, look at that. Wow.
Well, there's no number there.
Uh-huh, I just have to know that one. All right, well, okay, there's still some secrets here. A lot of the things that happen to make the show sound seamless and perfect in your ears takes a fair amount of skill, and I've only been doing this now for not long enough. And so I'm still learning every day, which is really exciting. Okay, the phone lines are still open, so I guess you guys are content with what we're doing right now. And we'll kick right in with our guest. Please introduce yourself on the mic. This is one of our 8 candidates running for the director of KIUC.
Hi, Jonathan. My name's Bill Peterson. We've talked before.
We have. And I want to encourage you, if you speak directly into the mic, you can hear with your earphones how well you're coming through.
Okay.
And there you go.
It's new to me, obviously. Anyway, I'm running for a position on the board of KIUC. There's basically 3 positions open. There's 8 candidates. As far as I can tell, all 8 are qualified. So what makes me stand out? Good question. And that's hopefully what we can get into today to see if what I do makes any sense.
Well, I think... why don't you explain to the listener a little bit about what you understand the directors at KIUC do?
I think that's a good place to start. One of the things that's important to know is that the directors of KIUC do not involve themselves in the daily operations of the utility. Basically, they have to have hands off. All they're allowed to really do is set direction for the utility. And that means, where are we going? Are we trying to go more solar? Are we trying to go away from fossil fuels? Are we deciding that, what the heck, let's close the whole thing down and go back to burning wood fires on the lawn? That's the kind of directions that the board of directors set.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that the directors focus on the big scale, the big picture, strategic choices, and then it's up for the employees of the cooperative to figure out how to get those targets accomplished.
That's exactly the case. The board hires the CEO, sets goals for the CEO, and then it's up for the CEO, the chief executive officer, to lead his team of experts to try and fulfill those goals. It can be very challenging. Obviously, KIUC hasn't been doing too bad a job of it because they've managed to go more renewables than any other utility in the Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just saying they're the tallest of all the dwarves isn't really setting the bar too high.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, this set of dwarfs is taller than most utilities on the mainland.
Well, it's also the case that we happen to live in the tropics, and solar electricity is a highly viable form of electricity here, and that most of the solar electricity on the island was installed privately by residents in response to KIUC's extremely high electrical rates. So they often get credit for what they don't deserve.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I also think we have to realize that KIUC is not really all that anxious to do more of that solar. If you look at their long-term plan as it's set up right now, they want to build their own solar. They don't really want to encourage individual residents do solar on the roof. They haven't put any major roadblocks in the way like HECO has over on Oahu. But it's clear it's not their primary mission to get people to install solar on their roofs.
No, it isn't, because when people first began installing solar on the roofs, they were getting what was called net metering.
Exactly.
For every watt that you consumed at your home, you paid the same price for that. For every watt that you generated and fed back into the grid. Now they introduced something called Schedule Q a while back, and that was at 22 cents or so a kilowatt hour, 20 cents a kilowatt hour, and it's been steadily going down.
It has, both as a flat rate and as a percentage of what you're actually paying out on electricity. For instance, 2 years ago, the rate was roughly 55% of what you pay. So.
Which still isn't a great deal. But
which still isn't a great deal. Net metering's 100%.
Yeah, and I should just say for the listener who maybe isn't so familiar with why net metering came into place in the first place, is net metering was something that was mandated for all the utilities in the country to encourage the development of independent, non-petroleum-based generating capacity where the utilities were moving too slowly, and it was easier for private residences to do that on their own. And it was a way to encourage individuals to put up their own capital, to invest their own money in building up and building out the generating capacity of the grid that they were members of. So it was a way to incentivize the creation of a more broadly distributed generation across the whole grid, not just centralized power. So there was some success. And with the success of that project, they have been steadily scaling back their incentive.
Yeah, and actually it was, I think they were surprised by how successful it was.
If the price of electricity, just to go to classical economics, I mean, the higher a cost is or something, the more opportunity there is to try and avoid that cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's exactly what people did.
Well, and it benefits everybody for them to do that. I mean, if you take a look at what it's costing to build for KIUC to build a solar farm, mm-hmm. the one out at Anahola, which is supposed to produce 12 megawatts of electricity, is scheduled to cost $50 million, and it's being built on Hawaiian homelands.
Yeah, now that's a really interesting issue. Do you want to take a minute to sort of delve into that?
Well, I can't tell you that I know a whole heck of a lot about it. I know that the agreement was basically with the state, and that the land could be used for other purposes, agricultural, homes. Instead, it's being dedicated to a solar farm. Now, that's not a bad use, but it seems to me if you took that money and gave it as incentives to people to put solar on their roofs, you'd be using land that's already in use, and your build-out cost would be essentially zero. Hmm. So, take this for instance. $50 million to build a 12-megawatt solar farm in Anahola.
Hold on. While he's doing this, Marshall, do you want to try and crunch some numbers so we can figure out what the cost per kilowatt hour may be?
Sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Can you repeat those numbers, please?
Yes, sure.
Okay. This is published from the KIUC website, which, by the way, is a good source of information.
Yeah. And if you don't know what that is, listener, it's KIUC.COOP. KIUC.coop.
Exactly right. There's some really good information on that. Take everything you read with a grain of salt like you would anything on the Internet.
Well, I think it's a more reliable source than several on the Internet.
I would agree to that, yes. Anyway, they've projected a $50 million cost for the Anahola solar farm, which is 12 megawatts. They've projected $40 million for the...
The Ele'ele?
The one in Kualoa. Excuse me, Kualoa.
Is that a third?
Right now they've got the one out at Port Allen. That's 6 megawatts.
Okay.
I don't know what the actual construction cost was on that. That's actually in operation.
Right. That one's up and running.
Right. They've got a 12 megawatt being built at Kualoa Mill.
Oh, okay. I was not aware that there were three solar farms.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Anyway, that one's projected to cost $40 million for the same 12 megawatts.
Hmm.
And then the one at Anahola is $50 million for the same 12 megawatts.
Well, there must be some differences in the site in terms of infrastructure.
I'm sure there is,
like,
and maybe the state's getting more money in terms of rent for that property.
Sure, there could be different lease arrangements for the property, yeah.
Anyway, where's the note here? Yeah.
Well, while you're looking for over your notes here.
Well, we put in about 1.8 megawatts. Of solar on individual roofs in 2012.
Okay.
The cost of the utility for that was essentially zero.
Zero.
Now, there's some infrastructure costs upgrading the...
the capacity of the
substations.
The
capacity of the substations
right,
and
right.
everything. But you know what? They're going to have to do a lot of that anyway as they upgrade the whole framework.
Right.
So
the cost for the generating infrastructure itself to the co-op when individuals put their own solar power up is zero.
Hard to see that as a bad investment on the side of the co-op.
It's a great investment because it didn't cost them a dime. Now you have to look at the longer current term life cycle costs and stuff and what the power purchase agreements are going to be, and it can get real complicated, all that math.
Yeah.
But shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth like that.
I wouldn't think so. And the only problem with the Q rate as it is, I mean, granted, Pat said when he was here last week, that the co-op basically wants to buy the power at the cheapest rate it can get it. which I understand. So right now, what they tie the Q rate to, the rate to which they pay individuals back for electricity they sell to the utility, is based on the lowest possible rate they can generate electricity themselves by burning fossil fuel.
Right.
And that's currently at about 13.7 cents per kilowatt hour.
That's amazing that it's dropped so low.
Well, the price of oil has dropped a lot lately.
Right. Highly volatile commodity.
Highly volatile. Yeah. Chances are it's going to go back up.
Chances are 100%.
Yeah, I would say so. This is not sustainable in any way, shape, or form.
It's like building a house on quicksand. I want a more stable foundation than that.
Exactly.
It's got to be nerve-wracking for the not the engineers, but the financial people at KAC. I mean, can you imagine trying to run a whole business when your prime commodity is like fluctuating so drastically in price? You never know what it's going to cost.
Yeah, it's sort of like when you go to the restaurant and they mention the fish at market price. You have no idea what you're getting into.
Right. And if it changes every 2 minutes, wow, should you pay before or after you eat?
And, of course, if anything blows up in the Ukraine or Russia or anything like that, that's going to affect oil prices around the world substantially.
Yeah.
So you never know. You're hostage to those fossil fuel prices.
Right. It's a house of cards. It's so unstable.
Yeah. And KIUC typically pays between $60 and $100 million for their fossil fuels they use.
Yeah. And one of the critical things about that is that or $100 million of our dollars on this island that are gone forever.
They're gone off
gone
island.
Gone forever. It's like a big hole in your purse where $60 to $100 million is falling out of here. You're like, whoa, what's wrong with our economy?
Yeah. Now, for instance, they've been pushing biomass lately as a way to keep some of those resources on island. Now, I'm not a super fan of biomass.
What do you see? What issues are raised for you?
Well, for me, the issues are you're still burning something, which means you've got to cleanse that stack as it's going out. You have to worry about CO2, carbon monoxide, a lot of pollutants. These are issues you don't have with hydro or solar.
Right, but when you on hydro, you have diversion issues, you have riparian issues.
You do.
You have water. You have other community of users for the water. You have farmers. You have residential. You have the biosystem itself.
Exactly. You know? So there's no form of energy that doesn't have some kind of issue involved with it.
Except for megawatts.
Well, megawatts is very good. And megawatts is the first thing we should be doing, which is basically not using the electricity in the first place.
So walk me through that. That seems kind of counterintuitive. Help me better understand. What does that mean? I've heard of megawatts. What are megawatts?
Okay. Basically, megawatts is a way of measuring power that you don't use. As you used the term the other day, you use the example of putting up a clothesline in your backyard.
Okay.
So you've generated megawatts. That's the power you didn't use to dry your clothing in a dryer.
Okay.
And it makes perfect sense, you think about it. Okay, that's a megawatt as opposed to a megawatt. You've canceled that amount of usage of electricity that you didn't have to generate. Nobody had to purchase. They'd have to purchase the fuel for it. You've made incredible savings just by cutting that. Now, you do the same thing when you put in a LED bulb instead of a conventional bulb.
Because it uses less power?
It uses less power. The same thing when you use buy a refrigerator that draws less juice over a year. You do the same thing when you... you basically do the same when you buy a Prius and you use less gas than you do... in a conventional vehicle.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, for every watt that you don't use, it's as if you've created a watt because that same watt is now freely available to do something else.
Correct. Plus, it means one more watt that you don't have to build out more infrastructure to generate. So instead of having to build another generator this year, maybe we can move it down the road 15 years as the population grows.
Well, it's interesting. You look at long-term growth of the island population. And I was just talking with Ben Sullivan, who's part of the energy efficiency team with the county. And he was saying that they have a strategic objective of in the next 10 years, reducing the amount of electricity that the county uses by 30%, 3% per year. And I asked him, you know, how can you do that? There's more people living here. There's more people, you know, have more traffic lights, you know, whatever. How's that happen? And he explained to me that as you get more akamai, more clever, more smart, more insightful, and you use your energy more wisely and more efficiently, that we can all actually get by, do better with less.
Yeah, and I think it's a mindset that we have to basically look at and say, how can we do this better? I mean, I've seen people who have their air conditioners on with their doors open. I mean, that's crazy.
Are they trying to cool down the island?
I guess so.
Yeah. I'd like to
stand in the refrigerator door for a while if that's what it's going to take. But, I mean, like, we don't even have an air conditioner at our house. We've got open windows on all sides. But we're lucky we happen to be in a zone where we get plenty of breeze.
Well, we're all really lucky on this island of Kauai. And I think we've got a caller standing by right now. Let's see if you have a comment or a question for... please say your name again.
Bill Peterson.
Okay. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha. I was wondering if methanol capture from the dump wouldn't be wise at this time. I know there's Port Richmond in California supplies power for 650,000 people off of the dump just by running diesel generators from the methane that they normally burn off with a flame. Do they engage in that here on the island?
Do you want to listen for your answer off air, caller?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in. All right. Go ahead.
Can I speak to that? Okay. As far as I'm aware, currently we're doing nothing with methane. As he mentioned in Richmond, basically what they were doing before is just burning off that excess methane, which meant they were polluting the atmosphere. They were doing all sorts of things with it.
Well, they're also stopping that methane from going into the atmosphere as a greenhouse gas. Methane is a many times more greater multiplier of the greenhouse effect than carbon dioxide.
Right. So there was a net benefit in actually burning it.
But it seems like a shame to just have a flame for nothing.
Why not?
Yeah.
If you can use that same flame to produce heat, to produce steam, to drive generators, there's a net increase in what you're basically getting twice the value out of that same chemical release. Now, I think that's a great idea. The only problem is you're still creating carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, other gases that are going into the atmosphere. If you can find a way to restrict that release of greenhouse gases and at the same time use that methane, that's great. I don't know of any current projects that do that, but I think it's theoretically possible. I know we also generate a lot of methane with the sewage plant here on the island. In addition to the dump, those are both sources. I mean, they're renewables in any way, shape, or form you want to look at it.
Sure. Well, as long as people keep eating.
Yeah. That's gonna happen.
But I think it's also insightful to recognize that it's a different way of looking at the byproducts of our existence and saying, hey, wait a second, maybe there's still value in there. Maybe, you know, as you take something at the store and you throw away the packaging, or you know, you have your things that you flush down the toilet, just because you want it away from you in that minute doesn't mean that it doesn't have some other valuable use.
Well, this is a good point. And one of the things that was pointed out to me, because I was talking to people about the trash to energy systems as well, where you basically take that trash out of the landfill and burn it.
But now you don't seem to be a big fan of burning.
I'm not a big fan of burning. I mean, we have plenty of sunshine here. We have potentially plenty of hydroelectric.
Provided that we get our water situation.
Provided we can find it in a way
we have a lot
culturally
of,
and sociologically positive.
Yeah, we have a lot of remediation to do with the way water moves around on this island.
Right. But if you think about it, one of the things KIUC is planning right now that I'm aware of is to use the solar that they generate. Basically, they pump water uphill to a reservoir during the day when they're generating excess power from the solar and use that same water coming downhill at night to actually generate electricity.
Yeah, it's a way of using water as kind of a big battery.
Exactly. But because battery technology is still pretty far away for a large-scale investment.
KAC, you may be aware that KAC has recently made some large battery purchases, and, you know, we're very new in this whole, you know, big battery technology, and so the batteries were not really living up to their claims from the manufacturer, so... you know, there's theory and then there's practice. Mm-hmm. We got to work our way through some of this stuff. A moment ago, I think you were going to start mentioning something about waste to energy, and I wanted to get you back to that.
One of the sad issues about waste to energy, it's a great concept. You burn trash, you generate electricity. You still have to worry about what's going out the stack in terms of pollutants, but you also may be burning trash that can be recycled, and there's more value. It's like megawatts. To recycle that plastic generates more megawatts than burning it to generate energy. Because it takes more energy to originally create that plastic.
Oh, you're talking about embodied energy.
Well, basically, if you create those plastic bottles, to recycle them costs you less energy than you would gain by burning them. And it takes more energy to recreate them than it does to just recycle them.
Gotcha. And then there's the whole economics of the situation. I know that with a lot of waste-to-energy facilities, the private company that comes in and says, hey, we'll build a big burn factory for you, but you have to guarantee us that we're going to get X amount of trash to burn.
Yeah.
Because you're supplying the fuel to our factory.
And I think that's an issue because, of course, somebody wants to make a profit in there.
They do. Yeah.
And one of the wonderful things about being a co-op is we don't have to show a profit. We just don't have to show a loss. And I think that is the big, big difference between KIUC and HECO or any of the other utilities in the Hawaiian Islands is this is basically owned by us, the customers. And it means that it doesn't have to show a profit. It doesn't have to push sales of electricity. HECO is concerned because of the...
And HECO is the private...
HECO is the private electrical utility on Oahu and most of the islands.
Yeah, I think they kind of...
They're in the process of changing
ownership
and
everything. They're like gobbling up and stuff, yeah.
But for them to show a profit, they have to sell electricity. It's not to their benefit for people to reduce their usage. It's not to their benefit for people to conserve or actually even to build out solar. They probably would never have built out solar even as net metering if it hadn't been basically mandated by the federal government. KIUC was pretty smart about that. They said they did introduce net metering when they first started, but they limited the net metering to basically 1% of the total overall electrical usage.
Yeah, and that was a great deal for the people who got in before the door closed.
Yeah.
Because they're still getting that great deal today.
They still are getting that great deal. Anybody investing today has to fight a little bit more of an uphill battle to make that investment pay for itself.
Well, we've got another caller who's called in, and I want to get them have a chance to chime in. Aloha, caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Bill?
Yes, I called before. I just wanted to clarify that the methane is actually captured and used to run regular diesel engines that produce the electric power. So, and they actually burn up any byproducts and leave you with no emissions. So it's a really good deal. The engines run clean because it's a gas form, and it's right off your dump. And you can convert any big diesel engine to burn it. So that's actually the process.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in with that comment.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, caller.
Yeah, and thanks for the clarification on that, too. I was thinking they used it in steam conversion. But if it's burning diesel, it probably is consuming more of the byproducts. But devil's in the details on all these projects.
Yeah, and there's a lot of details. Well, let's see. I sent you some questions on email last week, and I wanted to get to one of them here. Perhaps you saw in the strategic plan that was included along with the ballot materials that KIUC is intending to create 100 megawatts of stored capacity, of storage capacity for energy. Do you think that makes good sense when our peak is only 75 megawatts right now, and it's a strategically wise move to decrease our use?
Well, I know from working projects when I was an IT manager, my previous existence was either as a boat guy or a IT guy. We always had to overbuild projects because demand always has this sneaky way of coming up behind you and hitting you over the head when you least expect it. Particularly, I would think, in KIUC's case, with solar in system, with diesel electric, with wind, with any other source of energy, you can't count on everything all the time. Even the diesel, when we had the power outage on New Year's Eve, it would have been really nice to have had some storage capacity.
You know, it's really, I thought that was a really beautiful moment when it occurred. I was at a club, and there was a great music show going on, and, you know, of course, it was New Year's, so everybody's all happy. And I think it happened at around 20, 25 after midnight.
Yeah.
And the power went out, so show was over, and the lights went out, but the moon, which happened to be very nearly full that night, it never went out.
Mm-hmm.
It just stayed up there shining, silver light over everything. And it was kind of cool because rather than stay later at the party after New Year's getting drunker and drunker, everybody just quietly went home in the beautiful moonlight.
Yeah, I'm sure KPD kind of was sad there weren't more tickets to be passed out. I thought it was a beautiful night that evening, too, because it was the same thing. I was out that night as well, and when it went off, it was just a beautiful. I was down at Niwili Willy Harbor, and it was so beautiful out over the water. On the other hand, during Aniki, we lost power, too. Of course, we lost most of the phone poles and the power poles as well, so it wasn't much of a problem.
And a couple of trees.
And a couple of trees, a couple of roofs here and there.
A couple of buildings.
Yeah. Having excess capacity in those kind of situations pays for itself.
It can. But let's say,
It will. I guarantee you it will.
Well, let me pose this question to you.
Okay.
I don't know how tall you are, how much you weigh, but I'm just going to guess you weigh like 160, 170 pounds or so.
A couple of years ago. I'm down to about 150 now, so.
Okay. So there's a right size to be. You look fairly fit to me. My question is, do you want to get a pair of pants with a 48-inch waist in case you might take on a whole extra amount of capacity?
Well, actually, I still have those pants in my closet left over from when I was a little heavier. But, your point's well made. You don't want to oversize it. The magic number for us is somebody – that's a really good technical question, to which I do not have the answer.
But fortunately, as the director, that's not your kuleana. We have
experts.
We have a whole team of really fantastic engineers.
And that's what the engineers should be telling us, and we should be finding out. And, of course, that should be a fairly transparent process, hopefully. That, KIUC has heard from its engineers that we, for most reasons, need 100 megawatt capacity instead of 75 megawatt capacity. But sometimes that process of how those decisions are made is not the clearest thing in the world.
Well, and engineers are often quite capable of telling you how you can get to a place, but they're not capable of telling you whether that's the place that you want to be or not.
Right, because to an engineer, that's not the serious question.
Right.
Same thing for me as an IT guy. My question wasn't why we should do this. My question was, oh, cool, something neat to build.
Right. So my question, or my concern, I guess I should say, my concern about KIUC is if they somehow have it in their head that we're all working on this infinite growth model, that things will grow infinitely into the future, and like 10, 20, 30 years from now, you and I will be like 300 or 400 pounds apiece. That's crazy.
Hopefully.
There's a right size for people to be. There's a healthy amount of you.
We're already seeing a trend for less electrical usage.
Well, that was my whole point. So
right.
So my question to you and to KIUC and the other directors is, hey, wait a second. might it be a little bit more insightful to take a step back from our assumptions of growth and say, hey, wait a second, what has recent energy demand been over the last 10 years? And you can see quite clearly that there's been a diminution of demand. And I think that that is very healthy. We've got another caller on the line. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for the conversation. Just want to kind of steer away a little bit from the more techie stuff, but still kind of stay on the solar thing and address it to our candidates. And that is the issue of ethics on the board, on our board, and how you feel about that and where that plays in the decision-making process in our community. And I'll give you an example that is relevant to the discussion. That is the Anahola solar facility. There was another proposed energy plan for Anahola, the Hawaiian Home plan, also that was the biomass plant. And for both those projects, CIUC was politicking very hard with Hawaiian Homes, or the state body, and not the community. They would hold Hawaiian Homeland meetings on Lanai, where no Anahola Hawaiians could attend, and KIUC would be there supporting both the biomass and that solar system. Although the great majority of Hawaiians in Anahola lands opposed both projects. So although it was legal for them to go sit and support those proposed projects, they also knew that the community in general was opposed to it. So I'd like to hear your position on the ethics of that and the community input on those types of projects. Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Well, short answer is it stinks.
And why do you say that?
Well, as reported, to move a meeting about Anahola lands to Lanai makes no sense.
Unless you don't want people from the community to be able to participate in the determination of their own future in their own homes.
I think that's a valid point, and I don't think that's really an acceptable venue to hold that kind of a meeting in. I'm not part of it. I was not part of KIUC at that point. I'm still not.
Well, you're a member, though.
I can't. Well, I'm a member, just like you are, just like anybody who uses electricity on this island pretty much is one way or another.
You know, that's not as true as perhaps we wish it was, because a lot of people who rent don't have their name on the electrical bill.
And actually, that's something I'd like to talk to at some point, too, because I think that's a very valid point.
All right, well,
they are underrepresented.
Let's address the caller's
But
call.
In terms of this, I think it was a mistake for KIUC to do that. I have no standing in KIUC, aside from being a member, to actually raise it as an ethical issue. But personally, I don't think it was a wise decision on their part. And I think the decision to build in Anahola on Hawaiian lands has some issues of its own. One of the reasons I support rooftop solar so strongly is it avoids doing this sort of thing. It means we're actually putting solar install on roofs that already exist, that already are used as home residences or commercial businesses. We're not having to rededicate agricultural lands. We're not having to take lands that should be put to other more beneficial uses just to generate electricity. I think it would have been a disaster to have a biomass burning factory out there myself, but nobody asked me, so I didn't put my two cents in. Anyway, I think KIUC is owned by its members. We're the voting members. We need to be aware of what's going on within the co-op. I'm assuming good aims on the part of everybody involved, because I think it's crazy to do anything else. And it's too negative. I don't go for conspiracy theories much, but I think...
Well, it's funny.
Even if we assume good aims, sometimes people make mistakes and we can disagree about the results. And I think that was a mistake myself.
Hmm. Well, another topic came up, and you said you're going to talk about Anahola first, but maybe you can go back to that. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it was. I can't what it was. All right. Well, in that case, since we launched into this whole conversation about KIUC, we kind of jumped over. Who are you?
Oh, well. So my name's Bill Peterson. I grew up on Santa Catalina Island off the coast of California, but my family's been here on Kauai for 30-some-odd years.
Also a relative newcomer.
A relative newcomer, yeah.
Yeah, not 65 yeah. generations.
My dad's buried here. My mother's buried here. So we do have roots. My daughter was Miss Kauai 2001, which I'm very proud of her, by the way. The family's been here on and off. I moved over here with my wife in 2007 when my dad fell and broke a hip. He'd been here since 83. And we came over to help him out, and he just passed away 2 years ago.
Oh, my condolences.
Well, I'm still dealing with it, but he was a heck of a guy. And now that I'm kind of back to my normal self a little bit, I'm reaching out, trying to find things I can do in the community that have a positive impact before I kick off.
Well, I think that's really all any of us can do. I looked on the ballot, and I didn't see anyone there named Bill.
Oh, I'm on the ballot as William Peterson. Everybody that knows me calls me Bill or some variation on that.
Well, I wouldn't want someone who's listening who likes what you have to say and would want you to be one of their directors on the board to look for Bill on the ballot and not be able to vote for you.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Actually, on the ballot description under William Peterson, you'll see the first thing I say is I'm Bill Peterson. And yes, I'm the Bill Peterson that is married to C. Peterson. I dance with Kauai Ballroom Dance Club. I race on the Willy Willy's Yacht Club's races, sailboat races every week. I paddle on the Waialua once a week on Sundays with Kawakini. And I do yoga up in Anahola and down in Kapa'a with Miley Waltimes. And I'm that same Bill Peterson. My new campaign slogan is Vote for the Ball Guy.
Yeah, I don't know if you're the only... Are you the only bald guy running?
I think I am. Everybody else looks like they've got a good stock of hair. Gee.
Okay. Well, that's a distinguishing feature, I guess.
You got to go with what you got.
Well, I think that our cooperative is a really important and hugely impactful organization on the island. And I think that it really behooves all of us to learn as much as we can about how it works and how we can get involved in it. And I know that... sometimes the people who want to get involved with KIUC and the way that KIUC wants people to get involved with them don't always seem to line up with everyone being happy. What recommendations do you have for how people can constructively engage with KIUC, and what changes might you think would be beneficial for how KIUC could engage with our community?
Well, I think they've done a reasonably good job in trying to outreach to the community through their magazine and through their website. I think they could do more in terms of their meetings, in terms of keeping them local. I think they probably need more in terms of a local community rep who goes out and talks directly to folks at various locations. You mentioned renters before. That was the subject.
There we go. Thank you. Good for you.
I had an email from a gentleman who wanted to support me but couldn't vote for me because he was a renter.
There you go.
And it occurred to me when he said that, hey, you know what? There's a whole class of people out here that don't have any input right. what's going. They, and they're paying
they,
the bill.
They pay the bills, but they have no say.
Right.
Which I think, how does there's a little expression about that? How does that go?
Taxation without representation.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Anyway, I think somebody needs to be speaking to their needs. And I don't know if there's, I don't know what their needs are because I'm not a renter. But somebody needs to basically be representing them to KIUC in some fashion or another because they may have a whole different set of concerns. I don't know what they are.
Well, I have some friends who rent, and one concern that they have is they would like to be able to put a solar hot water heater on their roof, or they would like to put some solar panels in their yard or on their roof. but it's not their roof. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't make any economic sense for them to make what would otherwise be a wise investment that they and our entire community would benefit from.
Yeah, and unfortunately...
So how do we fix that?
That's an unfortunate thing, because the landlord, as long as the renter's paying the KIUC bill directly or indirectly, has no real impetus to invest in solar either.
Right.
And the same thing, wind or any other form of alternative energy. If somebody else is paying the bill, who cares?
Who cares, yeah.
Right.
Leave the lights on.
Now, personally, I think this is one area where KIUC could do a little more reach out. And, I mean, KIUC is a fairly big operation. We're talking 190 some odd million dollars a year in revenues.
For me, I'm a simple man, so I just like round things up to even numbers.
200 million.
There you go.
Okay. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of economic power.
And they employ over 150 people on the island.
Yeah.
And you know what? God bless them. I think the jobs pay very well. I think that's awesome. I love to see families thrive here on the island.
I think it's great. They're a nice economic power. I would like to see them use some of that economic power to support rooftop solar, to support rooftop solar water heating.
Which is even a bigger bang for your buck than photovoltaics.
Before you go photovoltaics, make sure you have solar water heating.
Now, why is that?
Well, number one, like you said, it's the biggest bang for your buck you can get. KIUC does support it through loans program they have, and also they will give you some money back on your bill based on your investment. But what I'd really like them to see, what I'd really like to see them do, is use their purchase power to bring the cost of those solar systems down for people on the island buying them. Right now, if you want to put a solar water heating system on your roof, you're going to be out of pocket, between $2,000 and $4,000, depending on who you buy through. And a lot of that is basically costs that could be reduced if we had group buying power, where KIUC would buy the units and then resell them at no charge to their customers.
So you're saying if KIUC took some of its $200 million and made that available to the community and, for example, bought 1,000 solar hot water systems, then every one of its members would be able to get them at that reduced price that their purchasing power would create?
And maybe even make it so they could pay that cost off over time on their KIUC bill.
So then the cost would be associated with the bill and not with the person, or the house and not the person. Account. Yeah.
There's details you definitely have to work out, because people sell houses, people move, all those sorts of things. But if you have that capability, suddenly it gets really easy to put solar on, and that's a negawatt. That's electricity you didn't have to burn, and you don't have to build up the utility to provide power for. So maybe you can keep it at 75 megawatts instead of 100 megawatts storage.
Well, I actually did the math on this, and if I can remember it correctly, I think that hot water heating is about 30-35% of the average residential electrical consumption.
That sounds about right.
And let me see if I can walk through this math out loud. And the residential part of the grid is maybe 40% of the total, and then commercial and large-scale users is the other part.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, 70, I think it works out to about 6 or 8 megawatts of power being used to heat water that we could have the sun do for nothing.
Exactly.
So if everybody put solar hot water panels on their roof, that would be the equivalent of creating another biomass factory that doesn't exist. You wouldn't need to do it.
Or not buying a couple million dollars worth of diesel fuel.
Yeah. So that seems pretty wonderful to me. And that's an example of the kind of, I hate to say innovative, because I wish it were just more broad spread, but that's an example of a really innovative way of beginning to address our electrical needs without trying to burn stuff to make electricity.
Yeah, and it's something that you probably won't see happen on Oahu with HECO, because they're out to sell electricity.
Right.
If they stop selling electricity, they don't have profits. We're a co-op. We can do that.
Yeah, our savings are our savings.
Exactly. So, I mean, I really like the co-op model. I wish it was used more broadly, but it is what it is. So.
Well, we're coming to the top of the hour, and so I wanted to give you a chance to make some closing comments or sort of sum up your philosophy and why people should vote for you.
Okay, well, as you can tell, I'm strongly in favor of rooftop solar. I think it's the cheapest way for the utility to expand its capacity in a beneficial way to the environment without high infrastructure costs. Basically, you're letting people invest in their own futures. I think it's a good thing. And I think to do that, you really have to stabilize that Q rate. You may not be able to raise it to net metering levels where you get 100% back, but you need to keep it at least stable so it's a predictable amount, because otherwise people aren't going to invest. I mean, we're in the process of putting solar on our roof right now. We've signed the contracts, we've written the checks, but when I saw the rates going down on that, it gave me some serious misgivings. But then I said, okay. My wife and I talked it over. We said, hey, we're doing this because it's the right thing to do anyway. If it takes us 8 years instead of 5 years to get our money back, it's something we'll live with. But that unit going on the roof supposedly is good for 25 years. So it's a good investment for our future and for the island's future. Aside from that, basically, I come from a boating background. I'm used to being out on the ocean dealing with limited resources and having to do things the hard way often enough. So I'm very conservative when it comes to how to use electrical resources, and I think that's something that the utility could benefit from.
Hmm.
Other than that, vote for me, vote for Pat, vote for anyone you choose, but let's get the conversation going.
Well, I think that no matter who gets voted on to the board of directors, our community benefits greatly when we have conversations like this, because even more important than smart meters, we need smart members to make our co-op work. And I want to thank you for joining us again. Please say your name.
Bill Peterson, and thanks to you and KKCR for providing this forum. I think it's been very important.
Well, we're very pleased to do so. In fact, it's our responsibility. It's a kuleana that we have to the community to provide a medium so that issues like this can be raised and that individuals can call in and make comments. And so I just want to thank you very much for speaking with us today. This is Jonathan Jay. I'm filling in for Felicia with Marshall, and we're going to be coming back in a few minutes after our station break, and we'll be right back with more Kauai Soapbox.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Moloa'a, K284AL, Haleiwa.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This program, Kauai Soapbox, is made possible with listeners just like you in partnership with Balihai Realty and The Copper Man.
Coldwell Banker, Balihai Realty in Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Balihai Realty also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihai.com or by calling 826-7244.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
And thank you for sharing your afternoon with us here on KKCR, the station that loves you. Got a little bit of Velvet Underground in the background. Thought that might be a nice musical piece to go from where we were to where we're going to be right now. And that is, we've had Jacob Devaney, who's been with us here in the studio, listening to our discussion about local issues and electrical consumption and stuff. Jacob is part of the culturalcollective.org. That's a blog he writes. He's also with unify.org, which is a global meditation website, which I'm actually really intrigued and excited to hear more about that. And then also he's a regular contributor to Huffington Post. So welcome to Kauai, and thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today.
Hello, Kauai. Thank you for having me on the station. Thank you to this amazing community that has welcomed me with open arms, and the mountains and the sea and the whales. What a special place this is, and what an honor it is to be here talking with you today about issues that affect all of us. So I'm really hoping to spark some inspiration in the community and some dialogue, and lay a foundation for a long-term, ongoing collaboration and friendship.
Gee, that sounds good.
Not so bad.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Well, there's a lot of things going on in the world, and you're focusing on several of them that, for one reason or another, really intrigue you or really concern you or really attract you. Share some of those with us.
You know, I guess going way back, I did one of those summer camp ranger programs when I was a little kid, where I had to pick up trash and learn about litter. And so probably from about that point in my life on, 5 years old, I canvassed for Greenpeace as a teenager. I just had a real strong interest in protecting and preserving what I love, and that's the planet.
Where did you grow up? What part of the planet did you come into being?
Well, I was actually born in Germany, but I was raised outside of Philadelphia, and I spent the last 20 years in Arizona. And Arizona was extremely influential on me in that I developed a probably almost 20-year relationship with the Hopi Nation, adopted into a village up there, and my friendships and work with the Hopi have been a huge source of inspiration for me, and so much deep learning. It's one of the oldest, it's probably the oldest continuously inhabited villages in North America. They call it the Tibet of the West, and very, very beautiful culture with a lot of wisdom.
I've heard it said that we are the people that we've been waiting for. Maybe you could speak to that.
Well, you know, I'm not really positive. I think I've heard that attributed to Hopi. I'm not really sure, but I definitely agree with the sentiment. I really believe in community power. I really believe that each of us has, as you say here, kuleana, or a responsibility for reciprocity. This beautiful planet we live on gives us life. It gives us joy. It gives us hard lessons for growth. It gives us everything. So I think it's really important for every individual to feel like they have a responsibility to reciprocate, to give back, to protect, to preserve, and to honor our planet. So we are the ones we've been waiting for, I think, fits that really well, in that, you know, we don't need to wait for presidents and governments or even spiritual beings to do the work for us. I think in some ways, I think
aren't we all spiritual beings at some
level?
Well,
I mean, I should say non-physical apparitions or whatever. I think that it's a very beautiful thing when we as humans step up to our own divinity and do the work. And that, I think that's part of why we're here.
And what do you see that work as?
I believe that the most important, powerful work that any of us do is the work that we feel called to do from within ourselves. when somebody else tells you what to do, it's not going to be as strong as when you have your own dream, your own vision, or your own feeling about what you're called to do. I believe everyone's called to do something, and I really encourage everyone to find that spark within themselves. And if you find it within yourself, then you're your own boss, but you're also plugged into your own source for what you're here to do. So it could be anything, really. Whatever that may be, I encourage you to do it. And yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because so much of how we're taught and raised, at least in America, is to do what you're told, to repeat what you was just told back to you, to show up on time, and to for everyone to listen quietly while only one person does all the talking. And that's not it's not very democratic. And so I think it's confusing, because we have all these values that are that we're bombarded with, and they're not consistent with each other. And you know, here you are saying, well, listen, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're not saying question authority. You're saying recognize your own inner authority.
Very much so. I think what you're talking about is kind of authoritarianism. And yeah, we live in a very authoritarianism culture that also believes in punitive control, which means punishment for not obeying the rules.
Yeah, and America is number one in the world for having the most people in prison per population.
Well, it's a business,
and it makes money.
And if it's a business and your customers are inmates, then your objective is to get more customers. So especially if you're taking tax dollars for each one of those inmates. So unfortunately, that is playing into a lot of the legislation that we have. I think the drug war is a big part of keeping the prison industrial complex fat and making lots of money off taxpayers, not putting nonviolent offenders in jail and so forth. But I think what we're on the verge of right now on the planet that I'm very super excited about is emergent, self-selecting, community-birthed, local-sourced, collaborative endeavors.
Why don't you go through that list again, because that seemed like a juicy list.
Yeah. Emergent.
Okay.
Self-selecting, community-based, local-sourced. What was the other one? Collaborative, cooperative. And I think in that, it's this really perfect segue to some of the topics that we wanted to cover today, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is actually, we have two kind of...
Yeah, you're going to have to break that down for people.
Well,
and for me, because I don't really know. I mean, you know, you hear the words Trans-Pacific Partnership, and you think, well, that sounds kind of good.
Well, of course, the partnership's great, and trade, and all those are wonderful things.
Spanning the world. I mean, that sounds noble.
Yeah,
and
it does. Unfortunately, those are terms that were used to sell us on something that none of us really want. And I'll tell you why here.
Well, first off, explain what it is.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Basically, to kind of bridge it back to what we were talking about, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is almost the exact opposite of local, community-sourced, emergent, self-selecting, collaborative model. In that, for example...
It's not local.
It's not local.
It's not community-based.
It's not community-based.
It's not cooperative.
The people that make the rules are not elected.
Right.
They are corporate... It's a corporate tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, although trade is a great idea and partnership's a great idea, the TPP, as it's known, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is kind of like NAFTA on steroids. It'll be horrible for American jobs.
So, what's NAFTA? Because not everybody knows what the North American Free Trade Agreement
is. Well, you know, I heard it once said the North American Free Trade Agreement is it's not free, it's not trade, and it was never an agreement. One of the things that especially up in the Midwest, car makers, for example, a lot of jobs were lost. When a corporation's objective is to return more money to its stockholders each quarter, and they're given the choice between paying, a union auto worker $26 an hour or someone in a Mexican car plant $8 an hour, what will they choose?
Well, you know, it depends on what their objectives are. If they only care about the bottom line, if they don't care about the community that they're operating in, if they're willing to cut costs at any cost to maximize their profit, they might not even stop in Mexico. They might go to Thailand.
Wherever they can.
Where they can pay people pennies a day.
You know, I don't think we need to get into the topic of corporations are good guys or bad guys, but the mandate of a corporation, of a CEO in a corporation, is to maximize profits
period.
For shareholders.
Yeah, period. Yeah, and if they don't
it's
do
not,
that...
You don't come to the board and say, hey, you know, I was really nice to these people. I gave them a raise or I helped clean up their stream and it cost us a couple extra million. You know, you're going to get fired.
Because so it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. No, that's not the mandate of the corporation. The mandate is to maximize profits, which means lowering costs.
Well,
for
lowering costs is one way to do that.
Well, yeah, part of it, yeah. So basically, NAFTA set up a situation where it was really easy to export American jobs.
To places that did not have the same worker safety control.
They didn't have worker safety control. They didn't have environmental. Oh, you don't have to put scrubbers in your smokestack. We can save some money there. Oh,
yeah.
You don't have to check the pollution that you pour into the local river. Cool, we can save some money there. Oh, the workers will work for pennies on the dollar here. Well, of course. Their mandate is to raise their profits. So they're going to go where they can get cheaper jobs, lower environmental standards, and so forth.
And
lower
safety
standards.
If they can cut corners, then they're going to be happy to do. I've heard that described as externalizing their costs. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah. Well, that's a big topic. But we see that a lot right now. We saw it with the banking crisis, you know, where you see the risks are placed on the shoulders of the taxpayers, and the profits are put in the pockets of a private corporation.
So it's a public-private partnership where the profits are privatized and the expenses are left to the taxpayer.
Exactly, and
so it's a good deal.
Yes.
For the corporation.
Yeah, and let's, you know, boil it back to what our country's about is that's called public office for a reason. And to be in public office with a private agenda for private profits is definitely a conflict of interest. And we have a major problem with that right now in our country. And it's really worth looking at. And one thing that I think is really important is... you know, to just break it down on that level. This is not about saying business is bad. This is not about saying corporations are bad. This is about saying public office is supposed to represent public interests. That means public health. That means our commons. That means our rivers, our, you know, our waterways, our air, and so forth, our communities.
Worker safety.
Worker safety, et cetera, et cetera. And so... I think it's important when we have these conversations, we live in a time that is so very divisive, and we've got...
You've noticed that.
Yeah, everybody's very much pitted against each other, and again, this is another part of the conversation we're going to come into. I'm a co-founder of Unify.org, which is a beautiful project with me and three friends. After years and years of being an activist and being angry and... fighting against this or fighting against that or pushing back against...
It gets tiring.
It really does. You know, this project...
Plus, it's so easy to become that which you oppose.
You actually become dependent on it. You know, I'm a real fan of Ken Kesey, and he used to say, you know, be careful what you're pushing too hard on, because eventually, if what you're pushing on falls away, you will fall with it. You picture yourself leaning against the wall, pushing really hard, and if that wall falls over, you fall too. So you then become invested in it staying there on some level.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh?
Yeah, so...
Not the objective.
Yeah, exactly. So being part of Unify.org, it was a group of friends that had various history in media and production and networking and activism and spirituality. And so... we kind of put our own little mandate in front of us to say, what can we do to always boil what we're doing back to things that we commonly can agree on.
And how do you do that without boiling everything too much?
Well, you know, obviously, if you read any of my articles on Huffington Post, you'll see I haven't completely given up pushing back. I think there's a balance there. I think we need to birth something new in this world that is more in harmony with the land. At the same time, we need to also help deconstruct this paradigm that, although it has served us for a while, it's no longer serving us. It's kind of wreaking havoc on natural systems. So we have to kind of do a combination of both. We have to work on building the new, but we also have to work on making sure that the status quo doesn't squash out any new possibilities too, and to help disassemble that which is not working and expose it for what it is.
If you're just joining us here on KKCR, I'm speaking with Jacob Devaney. He is one of the founders of Unify.org, and also is a frequent contributor to Huffington Post. And we're talking about, I think we're talking about a lot of big picture stuff here. And I think it's interesting, you were speaking a moment ago about, you know, some of the challenges that America is having. I think it's really important to point out that out here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, this is not America. You know, a lot of people just say, get off the plane, and they think, oh, I'm still in Los Angeles, or I'm still in, this is just a suburb of, you know, San Francisco or whatever. And this is not North America. It's not South America. It's not Central America. It's not America. We're out in the Pacific Ocean. And there's a very clear case that you may be aware of that can be held to say that the U.S. occupation of these lands is not in accord with international law. So there are people who reasonably conclude that the assertion of Americanness of this place is not valid. So I think that's something really important to remember, out of respect for people who've done a lot of work in that arena.
Yeah, I agree. And on that topic, Hawaii, all the islands here, would be under the jurisdiction of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, regardless if this is America or not.
That's
conversations like the one we just had about a local cooperative could very well be completely different under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Right now in this country, there hasn't been a huge amount of progressive forward movement for the environment on a lot of levels. It's actually gone the other way. But where we have seen progress is in local state ballot initiatives. We've seen GMO labeling. We've seen the Maui thing and the spraying for pesticides. We've seen medical marijuana. We've seen
now legal in 24 states as well,
yeah,
as the District of Columbia.
Yeah, and also gay marriage. There's been local and state ballot initiatives that have put a curb on fracking that's been polluting water and so forth. So really the forward motion that we're seeing in our democracy right now is not coming from the top down. It's coming from state and local ballot initiatives. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the issue with the Trans-Pacific, one of the issues with the Trans-Pacific Partnership is that a international tribunal of non-elected corporate officials would have the power to overturn local and state ballot initiatives. So say here a big international corporation comes in and starts polluting a riverway.
Yeah,
and everybody
hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically. And everybody on the island votes to say, hey, you know what, you can't pollute our river anymore. And it gets passed unanimously, and they have to shut it down. Well, then they'll just bring it to an international tribunal.
Run by unelected corporate representatives. Okay.
And they will, by corporate, international corporate law, have the ability to overturn our local ballot initiative, our local vote. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't really understand with the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Well, I think it's hard to understand because it sounds really crazy and wrong.
It's like, how could we even possibly be entered into that?
Or why would we?
Well, an important thing to say is that all of the negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership have been done in secret.
Oh, well, that's comforting.
Yeah, even Congress hasn't seen it.
Oh, good.
But most of
they would mess it up.
Yeah. Most of the people that have written it are international corporate lawyers. and lobbyists, special interests. So that is disconcerting to anyone with just a little bit of common sense.
Disconcerting. That's a very casual way to express that feeling.
And the other part of it is that our Constitution guarantees that Congress should have a vote and a say over our international trade. In this situation, they're trying to use fast track authority.
Fast track, which means no get look.
Yeah, the Congress won't look at it all. The president will sign it into law, and we will be stuck with it without any oversight
up or down,
our representatives.
You can't look at the details, just yes or no.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is a real, real problem. So I wrote a piece about it, and I said the title of the piece was called Conservatives and the Liberals Agree, the TPP Hates Your Freedom. And I really do think that this is potentially a very uniting topic for people that are Republicans and conservatives. They don't want to give a Democratic president full authority to sign an international trade deal. And at the same time, for people that are Democrats or liberals, I think we also don't want to let an international trade deal that would dictate our worker safety rights and environmental rules to be left to unelected international tribunals.
Unless you're one of the Democrats or the Republicans that are in office because of corporate money, so that you're working for their interests and you're going to do what you're told or you're not going to get reelected.
Well,
I mean, because we have a problem in this country because, democracy, this and that, la, 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 except you cannot get on the ballot if you literally don't have millions of dollars of backing.
Yeah, especially thanks to the Citizens United ruling. So we have private interests paying for the campaigns of public officials. So there's our conflict of interest, because when your campaign is bought by private interests, you owe favors to private interests. But the job description is public office. So you're supposed to be representing the public, not the people that bought your campaign. So that's a larger issue to get into, but it's just worth boiling it down to the brass tacks there.
Well, before all our brass tacks are boiled into nothing, I want to get back to unify.org because that is really intriguing to me. And but before that,
yeah,
let's take this caller.
Sure.
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi there. Excuse me. I'm calling from Hawaii Island to let you know that there's a secret Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement negotiations going on March 9th through the 15th this week.
right now as we're talking.
Right now at the Waikoloa Marriott. And we're having some forums in Hilo on Wednesday, March 11th at 6 p.m., at the Hilo Women's Club in Hilo on Lele Street, and also in Kona on Friday, March 13th at 6 p.m. at the West Hawaii Civic Center Council Chambers. Some of the speakers that are going to be there will be Dr. Jane Kelsey from the University of Auckland, New Zealand, Sonia Ray Reed-Smith, Third World Network Malaysia, and Polikapu Deadman from the Pele Defense Fund, and Ohana Ho'opakele on Hawaii Island, along with Eric Gill from Unite Here Local 5, and also Juliet Begley from the Americans for Democratic Action. And we're also having an Aloha Aina Day of Action against the TPP and Home Rule for Sovereignty, democracy, and transparency. That protest is going to be on the highway in front in Queen Ka'ahumanu Highway at the entrance to the Waikoloa Beach Marriott on Saturday, March 14th from 11 to 1. And we're also encouraging surfers, anybody with a sailboard, paddleboard, to go in front of the hotel. We have a couple of boats with sails that will have signs on their sails. And let's see, also speakers in the protest. Mainly it's Saturday is the protest, and the forums are Wednesday and Thursday night in Hilo and Kona.
Well, those sound like really interesting events that you're planning to hold, and it seems
well,
like...
Well, we just want them to know that it's not a secret because we know they're there.
So a lot of people who are listening right now, if they're not listening online from Thailand or Colorado, they're here locally on Kauai. They're probably not going to be able to make it to those events, but but do you have a website or something that you can direct our listener to if they want to find out
yes,
more?
Yes, they can go to, let's see, got to find it. It's called Malu'aina, the Center for Nonviolent Education and Action. And it's maluaina.org.
Okay, it's M-A-L-U-A-I-N-A.
M-A-L-U-A-I-N-A.org.
Okay, got to get the dash in there.
Right.
Hey, I want to say thank you to you for calling in and for everyone over there at the Big Island that's holding it down like that. And really want to encourage you to take lots of pictures.
Yep.
Make it beautiful, and you said it really well.
It's our biggest rent for living in Hawaii.
Yeah, our biggest thing is, you know, make it beautiful, and it's not a secret, and we're letting the world know it's not a secret, and the only way that they're really going to shove this through is if none of us are paying attention.
Right.
And so the best thing we could do is use your Facebook, use your Twitter, use your social networks, and yes. Thank you, Mahalo, for your great work over there.
It's a total Aloha Aina protest.
Oh.
And also, if I may, I'd like to plug a couple of things that people can go to to testify at the legislature right now.
Plug on, sister.
At capital.hawaii.gov to support HCR, that's House Concurrent Resolution 53, and that will, that's an art to have a constitutional convention to overturn Citizens United.
All right.
And that that hearing will be happening Thursday at 3 o'clock. And anyone that's in Honolulu can go and listen to the hearing and testify in person.
And it's my understanding that four states have already passed this at their level. And so Hawaii is potentially going to be the fifth.
That's right. And also on that capital.hawaii.gov website, you can also weigh in on the of Carlton Ching to head the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Yeah, it
that's
sounds like
PM
from his
514, where you can go to that website and oppose his nomination to the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Yeah, and pardon me, please say the name of the bill again.
The House Concurrent Resolution 53 was the one to overturn Citizens United through a constitutional convention, and the bill, or the, I don't know if it's a bill, I guess it's a, it is a bill, it's called GM 514 to oppose Carlton Ching to head the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Now, why do you feel that Mr. Ching's nomination should be opposed?
Because he spent just about his whole working life trying to dismantle the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and he doesn't have the experience to run such a complex agency or department, and he's... also on the board of directors for the Land Use Foundation. That
and who are they?
Well, you have to Google them. you'll have to. They're a group of developers that have had a group together for a long time that that testifies and promotes the weakening of environmental laws and rules that people have fought decades for in Hawaii.
Well, it sounds like Mr. Ching is actually a very capable and competent individual in terms of dismantling.
But he doesn't know anything about the Department of Land and Natural Resources to run a department.
He knows how to fight them.
He knows how to dismantle it.
And if he were in charge, I bet you he could do a very effective job of doing that. So
that's right. It's... bad, bad, bad news. And if this is the honeymoon, I want a divorce.
Yeah, well, it's definitely one of those fox into the hen house situations.
Absolutely.
And, you know, on that same note, we could bring that one right back to the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well. Citizens United is the reason people want to overturn it is because they're trying to curb the corporate money that is paying for the elections of our public officials. So, again, we're seeing progress on state and local ballot initiatives to overturn Citizens United, whereas if we had the Trans-Pacific Partnership in place, that would be another area where I'm sure an international tribunal of non-elected individuals would say, no, 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 you can't overturn that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, this is about bringing our power back.
And if you do, we're gonna sue.
Yeah, exactly. We will sue you. And, like, for example, lawsuits. Like, so in Vermont, the state voted to label GMOs, right? Truth in Labeling.
Our mayor supports that here, by the way.
Yeah, well, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which is a collection of food producers.
And it sounds humble enough, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they are now suing the state of Vermont. So just imagine I'm the governor, and I put a law into place that you, my people, voted for. And
because it's democracy.
Because it's democracy. And then a big, huge corporation comes in and sues me, or sues my state. And guess what? That is financial retribution for you, the taxpayer. And so next time it comes around and Joe Schmo wants to run against me, he'll say, man, you know, Jacob voted, put that law into place, and it cost taxpayers a lot of money. So these corporations are so wealthy, they have the ability to, you know, hoist financial retribution on voters and taxpayers for enacting laws that that go against their business interests. And that's a real problem, and that problem would get a whole lot worse under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So,
do you have any other closing comments or things you want to share with us?
Well, one thing that you may not have heard about, the Maui ballot initiative was supposed to go to court this morning, but yesterday Judge Susan Mulloway, federal judge, postponed it, and there were about 25 people that flew over from Maui and a few from Kauai to go to the hearing this morning, and it was postponed. And her reasoning was that she said she wanted to wait until the preemption bills in the legislature were through before she made any kind of ruling. But the fact is that the preemption bills that were in the legislature a few weeks ago were already killed.
So the reason that she gave was not a valid one, and all the people who flew across the islands, and it takes money to fly.
$300 for a ticket plus a hotel room
to testify.
We're all out that money, and we'll have to come back again on March 31st.
They got to testify at a meeting that isn't being held.
Right.
So it seems pretty strange to me that the wealthy and powerful can basically pick and choose the laws that they want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't like these laws, then they can just scrub them from the books.
Yep.
Well, I wish I could do that for me. I mean, all kinds of laws I would change. But I want to thank you for calling in, caller.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. We have another...
Come to the protest Saturday in front of the Waikoloa Marriott. Bring a sign.
All right, thank
you. Bring your aloha.
And we have another caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha. This is Rich. I'm parked by the water, looking at the waves, listening to your program, and I just wanted to call in and let you know that I was grateful to hear you bringing Jacob on the air to discuss this topic and all of his other endeavors as well. We've known each other a really long time, and just so happens I wound up on Kauai at the same time he was, and we've been doing lots of work for many, many years to try to improve conditions for all life on planet Earth. And he's got a lot of good things to say and a lot of good knowledge, so I just wanted to call in and...
And gush. Nothing wrong with
right
that.
Right on. Go for it, Rich.
Well, you keep up the good work, everybody who's listening, and all the activists. I wish I could be there to attend this protest. I am familiar with this situation, but unfortunately I won't be able to participate as I'm flying back to Minnesota tomorrow, so... You guys keep keep doing what you're doing at the station. Community outreach is a huge, powerful tool, and radio is a very good way of doing community outreach. So thank you for that as well. I'll let you get back to the discussion.
All right. Thank you, caller.
You bet.
Yeah, Rich actually does a bunch of work with the Sea Shepherd, which is all about preserving our oceans and the whales, taking care of our sea friends, the creatures that inhabit the oceans. So right back at you, Rich, and everyone out there who's following their own impulse, whatever it may be, to give back to this beautiful planet that we all love so much, to protect it, to preserve it, to honor it. Thank you so much.
So what about the people who can't be at the place at the time when it's happening? How can we be part of something bigger that we can't necessarily move ourselves physically to? And I'm trying to tee up a question here for you.
Let's bring this back to Unify for a second.
Exactly.
Okay, you know, here we are in Kauai, for example. We're much more powerful as a people when we can find the common ground that we share. We really don't have any enemies. Our enemy is ignorance. And the best way to dissolve ignorance is to engage in civil discourse, respectful dialogue, to build relationships, even to build relationships with people that you disagree with or who have different opinions than you. And if you can bring that conversation back to something that you both share in common.
Like we're alive.
We're alive.
On an amazing planet.
We need to drink the water.
We got to breathe the air.
Exactly. And if you can do that in a way that is beautiful and sweet and loving and kind. You know, they say it's easier to catch a fly with honey than, you know, poop or whatever.
Vinegar.
Or however they say it. Yeah.
Vinegar.
Yeah. So, But, you know, diplomacy, which I love the term peer-to-peer diplomacy. There was a guy named Ron Edry, who is a graphic designer, and he had been hearing for 11 years that Israel was going to bomb Iran. And he had a little girl, and she was, you know, 8 years old. And he finally said, you know, I've had enough of this. So he took a picture of himself with this little girl eating an ice cream cone. And underneath it says, you know, my name's Ron Edry. I'm a father. I live in Israel. And Iran, we love you. We would never bomb you. And he posted on Facebook. And slowly, people in Iran started doing the same thing back. And then it went all over the place. And by doing this kind of peer-to-peer diplomacy, we are dissolving the stories that governments are telling us that have us pitted against each other across borders. And this is one example where reaching out, using the tools we have, social media and so forth, we're able to dismantle the stories that are keeping us separate and pitted against each other. And that is a core goal with Unify.org. And we host globally synchronized meditations. And we've been doing that since September 2012. And our next one, March 22nd, World Water Day, globally synchronized meditation. What you're supposed to do is go to a local water source with your community.
What you're supposed to do?
Well, you know.
What you could gloriously choose to from your own inner volition.
Yeah, hit your shamanic drum at night and have your dream and your vision, and then go to unify.org, where we have an interactive map that will, it's a little Google map, and it'll show you the events that are happening in your area. And if there isn't an event, there's a button that you can click to create your own. And it's a way that you can network with people in your community. And people are encouraged to go to a local water source and honor the water. You can do it however you want to honor it. You can swim in it, or you can splash your friends in it, or you could drink it, or you could light sage, or you can do whatever you want to just really take a moment to honor water as the source of life. And in doing so, you get together with your community, you start to talk, you start to gather around something that you share in common with everyone in your community.
And the rest of the world.
And the rest of the world. And know that people are doing that all over the world on the same day. And then at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, which I think is 4 p.m. here.
No, you guys just jumped. So it's 3 hours now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you guys don't do daylight.
That's right. We just keep our clocks the same.
Yeah,
we never
so it's
jiggle
2 hours. I think it's 2 hours. Well, whatever. The official time is 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight time. So whatever that would be for Hawaii.
Three o'clock.
3 p.m.
Yeah.
There will be a globally synchronized meditation. We did one last August where we had over 140,000 people in 1,600 locations across the planet, all meditating at the exact same time for world peace. And
so is something like this, is it possible to levitate the Pentagon?
Well, there's an organization called the Global Coherence Initiative.
All right.
And they've done some amazing work. What they did is they put random number generators in a room, and the random number generators were generating random numbers. And then they filled the room with a bunch of people and had them all meditate. And the random number generators started spitting out patterns. And they didn't really understand that. The same way they don't understand if you put a bunch of clicking clocks in the same room.
Yeah, they resonate.
Eventually, they will all click tick-tock on the same tick-tock. So it is an emerging field of research.
Which means right presently, we don't know how it works.
We don't understand how it works. But we do understand this. Have you ever walked into a room where two people are having a vicious fight and they get quiet right away? You feel that. Have you ever been in a place like a music concert where everybody's favorite song is played and there's this joyous feeling? You feel that. So there is a collective field that is created when we focus together.
But science says that what cannot be measured does not exist. That's what science says.
Well,
isn't that sad for science?
Well,
because it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, but I think... Rupert Sheldrake, look up Rupert Sheldrake. His TED Talk was banned.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me intrigued.
That makes you really want to watch it.
That makes me intrigued.
But Rupert Sheldrake, in a nutshell, wanted to come forward as an established scientist and just say, hey, you know what? The speed of light is not fixed. We scientists know it. We had to create a number so that we could build all our calculations off it. But the speed of light actually fluctuates depending on
the medium through which it travels.
Yeah, and where we are in our orbit, and different parts of the solar system have different magnetics and so forth. So so his TED Talk was banned because he wanted to kind of expose that there are assumptions at the base of science as well. Now, personally, I think science is one of the greatest things that we have working for us on the planet.
When it's not working in service of corporate behemoths.
Yeah, when it's
bent on extracting profit and externalizing the negative consequences of their actions.
Exactly. It can be politicized like everything else. So we've been doing globally synchronized meditations. We decided we needed to pick topics that were universal or that everybody could agree on. So we do them on the spring equinox, the summer solstice, the fall equinox, and the winter solstice. Spring equinox is based on a United Nations millennial goal about water. It's about clean water. It's about cleaning the water, preserving the water. It's about making water accessible for people that don't have it. It's about loving the source of all life on our planet. None of us can exist without water. It should be something we can all agree on.
Well, I encourage you guys to consider that you don't want to remain northern hemispheric in your thinking, because one person's spring is another person's fall. And, you know, as we move further into the Europe doesn't dominate the way the world thinks anymore, we'll have northern light and we'll have southern light.
The equinoxes are still the equinoxes.
They are.
The solstices are still the solstice. But yes, we are doing that. I'll tell you, it's been interesting. I do a lot of the graphic design for unify.org, which you can look up Unify on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/unify. And, you know, I heard that Mark Zuckerberg bought some land here on Kauai. So just in case you're out there listening, Mark, you know, go ahead and turn up our reach at facebook.com/unify and help us spread the word about something that we really can all agree on, which is, you know, the health of our water, which is the health of us ultimately and everything else that's alive.
Because this is a watery world and we're watery beings.
Yeah.
So, you know, what the heck? Let's put in a good word for ourselves and the planet at the same time.
Yeah.
And we have a caller who's been standing patiently by. I'm sorry for being so long to get you on. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is Felicia, and I'm so happy to be on hold.
No problem.
Okay, well, we can put you right back on.
Well, thank you for doing the show for me today, Jonathan. Well, I've been a little bit sick. I really enjoyed what I've been listening to, and it was a great piece to speak about the Israel Loves Iran piece that came out on Facebook. There is so much people empowerment coming, and what I often say is there are billions of us.
Yeah, seven,
and tens of
actually.
Thousands of them, and I'm making little quote signs in that. The them that really work to disempower the people, you know, it's a small group. And when we're talking about what people can do, among the things that people can do is simply be open-minded to learn and to be looking at, you know, alternate viewpoints than what's on mainstream media. And mainstream media is really fading into the background. They have lost their credibility for
yeah.
the most part.
Yeah, I saw recently that Fox is considered to be the most trusted of the major networks. And again, you know, the tallest of all the dwarves. Wow.
So when people are listening and learning and just looking up, that brings about really large transformations. You know, sometimes you don't actually have to go out and be take super action. Just learning shifts your behavior. If you know doing a certain thing is going to cause damage, you almost can't help but not do that so much anymore. And
it gets harder.
It gets harder. And then when we're being told a fantastic story of half-truths or non-truths at a political level and a corporate level, when people realize, no, that's not true, it's like shining a light in a dark room. And the more we just share and we become aware, we're waking up. And I think that that's really an exciting time to be alive. There's a lot that's a
Me
little
too.
Bit scary out there when you see things like power grabs, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership or these power grabs. We had the caller from the Big Island, thank you, Shannon, talking about these placements of people like Carlton Ching. There's Doug Chin is another one who's been nominated or chosen to be Attorney General.
Is this by Governor Ige?
By Governor Ige, and he's a lobbyist for Correctional Corporation of America.
So he is financially incentivized to create a situation where more people get arrested.
Well, basically, and he wouldn't have that job if he hadn't come into the mindset that we need to be harvesting all these people and putting them into jail. You know, I mean, when you bring yourself into a point, if you're going to be lobbying for something like that, to me, that's a terrible conflict of interest. It's problematic. It's
well, and it's placing the whole reward mechanism of capitalism, profit. It's putting profit in the direction that we don't want to go. We're incentivizing and rewarding consequences that we all agree are actually quite negative.
That's right.
So it's like capitalism is working tremendously in reverse.
Yes, and so our economic structure is problematic, but the more people are sharing, the more people are giving. They're talking about how the velocity of money has slowed down greatly, meaning people are not spending that dollar so quickly. And that's pulling right on the strings of the powers that be. They don't want us doing that. So
no, they like us all frenzied.
They want us frenzied, and the more we spend, it's like it feeds their addiction. So give, share, be kind, be entertained simply, buy locally, do everything you can to, I mean, you know, like I believe it's a good idea for people to be localizing as much of what they can and helping those around them, and it feels good. So it's not like everything has to be about a fight. It could be about being aware and not needing that which you don't have to actually have, to separate wants from needs.
Yeah, desire from desirability.
Yeah. And then we don't have to go torture the poor Papua New Guineans for the gold and the copper in their hills, or, you know, all these different elements. So I'm going to let you guys finish up, but I just wanted to say thank you to everybody in the room there, and thank you to the listener, and thank you, Jonathan and Marshall, for and Dove.
Well, Well, I want to thank
great job.
I want to thank you for setting this all up because it's such a
joy
just to come in, jump in, and like, okay, who's going to guess? Okay, what are we going to talk about? Okay, and you got it's also I don't have to make any phone calls. Fantastic! It's a lot of work that you did that most people don't know about behind the scenes to prepare the show.
Yeah, you know, and we should definitely do a little shout out for Jeff and Chie who introduced me to you at the NotGo concert and.
Yeah.
Really, really grateful that you're open to have me. I prolonged my stay here, which I was very happy to do.
That's hard.
Yeah. Right? So, and I will be back, and I cannot wait. I'll be back in April, and I love this place, and I look forward to spending a lot more time here. So.
And we look forward to hanaying you into our family.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. Love to all of you.
Lots of love. Yeah. So, look for the common denominator. Look for when you see that person you're arguing with, look in their eyes and recognize that they're breathing the same air. They need water like you. They have family. They have a mom or a dad that they love or a kid or a pet kitty cat or whatever. And find the thing that opens your heart. Make it beautiful. Make it joyous. Bring play into the equation. And what you'll find is that, like I said, our enemy is ignorance. And what you'll find is when you build bridges, when you open people's hearts, when you engage in dialogue, you dispel ignorance. And the other people aren't your enemies. It's the ignorance that's your enemy. So that's the best way to dissolve the ignorance and come into our collective community, locally and globally.
It's tricky when the ignorance is yours. And that's how I feel. You know, like, so I'm actually the one who didn't, Kalamai, pardon me, I'm so sorry. I need to open myself up. I need to become more humble. I need to listen more.
Well, humor, humility, and human all come from the same root, which is hue, which is
the
earth. Hum.
Yeah.
It's, you know, hey, we're all cosmic fools here. You know, we know what we know, but what we don't know is always going to be bigger than what we do know. And let's be all right with that, you know, and you know, laugh at yourself or someone else will.
You know, it's funny. We've been talking about, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and basically global corporate dictatorship. Wouldn't it be nice if instead of fighting, we could be uniting? Because there's a lot of capital that they could bring to everyone's benefit.
It's happening.
There's a lot of technology that could be shared instead of blown up. You know,
that's it right
there's
there.
A lot of connection that could be invested in instead of monitoring, you know, and spying and, you know, controlling. And I think a lot of it just comes from sort of a globalized discomfort, you know. There's a word I'm seeking here.
We just have to change the story.
It's kind of a fear, anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, and if everybody would just relax. It wouldn't even be the 99% against the 1%. Instead of a fight, we could all unite.
We like to say, and I like how that rhymed, too, we say the 99% to the 100% from anonymous to unanimous.
There you go.
We are here to unify. So, you know, from occupy to unify, we're one people. And it's beautiful, the things that we disagree on and our differences. That's okay. But
we all have different experiences, we all have different knowledges, we all have different backgrounds, we all had different parents, we all came from a different part of the world. I know things you never will.
Yep.
And I'm certain that you can teach me.
We could celebrate our ignorance. We can celebrate our folly as humans, two-leggeds in this world.
We have a quick moment for one more caller. Want to try and get you on there real quick before the end of the show here, and we've got Jazz with John coming up, so stick around for that. But aloha caller, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm Charlie Brown. I have a quick new chapter in my quest to give a free abundant energy source. There's a physicist who makes special vacuum tubes. He's made a thermionic tube with two metals of different but similar work functions, and the low work function metal will send electrons to the high work function metals, make electrical power, and absorb heat. So this will be a refrigerator
that generates
heat, yeah. Yeah, and so it will restore the world to a better, more sense in using energy. We're not.
Where do we get it?
It's only in the lab at PicoWatts, but
But how can people find out more? How can people get in touch with you? We have just 60 seconds left.
Just my phone number at the moment.
Well, what is it? What is it, Mr. Charlie Brown?
3-5-9-6-6-8-0. And thank you for everybody on the program today.
Hey, I want to say go to unify.org. Look at the map and join in this globally emergent, self-selecting, community-centered, locally sourced, collaborative, cooperative movement. Unify.org.
Hey, send something over to unify.org then.
Excuse me?
A little subset. I could send a subsection over to unify.org. Okay.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Aloha.
Aloha. And thank you, listener, for tuning in and sharing your afternoon with us here on KKCR. We're getting very close to the end, but Jacob, share with us one last thing.
March 22nd, all over the world, everyone, everywhere, together, love water. We are one people on one planet. Aloha, mahalo. Have a great day. Thanks for having me. I'll see you all soon.
Coming up next is Jazz with John. Thanks so much for tuning in. I've been filling in for Felicia, who is better and better, and we'll be back with you next week. I'll be on again Thursday, later this week. Speaking of water, we're going to be talking to a teacher who's going to be leading a workshop in water catchment. So that will be quite interesting, as well as speaking to